So, cuffing season, people. Pretty sure y'all feel that chill in the air. Cuffing season is upon us. So, this is kind of like a special edition in a psychotic version of Tudor Reviews. So, of course you got me, Romero Tudor, about to bring you a classic, a review of a classic right now. And because it's cuffing season, it's only right that I'm talking about, you know, situations where you're unnecessarily cuffed when you bring it all upon yourself, though. And I'm talking about Fatal Attraction, folks. 1987, this gem came out. Now, not only is this is just one of my favorite movies of all time, period. I think I would have to put this in my top 10 movies of all time. Hands down. The way that is directed, the way that the acting is, the execution of writing, everything falls in place in this movie and is damn near perfect. I put this up there with movies that are like so well crafted, like something like No Country for Old Men or Lucky Number 11 or something like that. I know they're like different genres, but I compare them to movies like that, or Cape Fear or something like that. But this movie, wait, let me just say something. Let me get this out the way. Now, I said this movie came out in 1987, but there was a movie that came out prior to this, some years before. I can't remember which year exactly. There was a movie that came out that paved the way for this, and it was called Play Misty For Me. If anybody knows what I'm talking about, Play Misty For Me, y'all remember that. It was directed by Clint Eastwood, and he starred in the lead role. And it was basically, you know, it was kind of the template for guy gets stalked by a batshit crazy lady, you know, who she either wants the D or she wants to cut it off and put it in a jar or something like that. It's along the lines of movies like that. It paved the way for Fatal Attraction. And I mean, the plot may have been different, but the overall narrative is kind of the same in terms of a psychotic woman, you know, a mentally unstable woman who's gung-ho googly-eyed for this one guy, and she'll do anything to get him. If she can't have him, nobody can, type of thing, and she'll kill him, or at least try to. So that movie came out, it was a great movie. And then you got Fatal Attraction, and no disrespect to Play Misty For Me, but anytime you get a movie that mocks or uses the same narrative as these movies do, they always compare it to Fatal Attraction. 9 times out of 10, you're going to hear that comparison, because this movie just had such an impact, just the way it was delivered onto people. And, you know, we don't get even the spoofs or the ones that are trying to be serious in the spirit of this. You'll never get another movie like this. Now, Adrian Lin, I think I'm saying his last name right. It's either Lin or Line. I'm going with Lin. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. He was already, I mean, not already, but he's done movies. He's done this. He's done Flashdance, 9 and a Half Weeks, Jacob's Ladder, Indecent Proposal, Unfaithful. Now, you can already see that with movies like Indecent Proposal and Unfaithful, he's already got a knack for this type of, this type of premise, you know, the infidelity type of premise. And honestly, fellas, I'm not trying to sell out right now, but this movie was made for us. This was like a cinematic wake-up call to tell us, listen, keep it in your pants, keep your shit in line, don't dip off from home, some chick will try to kill you. And a part of that, this movie being so good, is written by James Dearden. Now, I'm not sure what other works he went on to write, but the writing in this movie is genius. It's really mature. It's really it's masterful writing. The way that the scenes flow into one another, the way the dialogue goes, it's just like I said, man. You don't get, you know, thrillers like this anymore. You don't get movies like this anymore. Excuse me. Now, one thing I want to point out before I really jump into like the plot and the characters and, you know, my opinions on the movie overall, was that this was a big deal when it came out. And once people really let the buzz set in and let the movie set in, this got 6 Oscar nominations. 6. There are movies that don't get any Oscar nominations that are great nowadays, and back in the day. But on top of 6 Oscar nominations, they got 7 other different awards and 16 nominations on top of that. So this movie did numbers, safe to say. You know, locally, domestically, however, whatever you want to put it in, whatever category you want to put it in, it did its job and then some. And basically what you get here, you get Michael Douglas. He plays Dan Gallagher, and he seems like an everyday guy, really straight-laced business guy. He's a family man. He's married in this movie to Ann Archer, who plays Beth Gallagher. And let me say, man, now, of course, we're all going to get old one day. Ann Archer and Michael Douglas and Glenn Close, they are up there in age, and any roles that they're in now, they play up on the age. But Ann Archer is gorgeous in this movie, and Michael Douglas, I was about to sound like I'm talking to him personally, like he really was that character, but I honestly don't understand how you have a life that you have, family man, and you got a dog, a beautiful ass golden retriever, big ass dog, nice ass house, career, everything, white picket fence type of living, and you dip off on something like Ann Archer. Now in 87, chicks were built differently back then, but she was a Betty. And he dipped off. Now, not saying Glenn Close plays Alex Forrest, by the way. Not saying she wasn't attractive in this movie, but she's no Ann Archer, that's for sure. So anyway, you get Dan Gallagher. He's businessman, family man, straight-laced type of guy. And he comes across Alex Forrest. And he runs into her prior to him having an affair. They do come across each other at like this banquet, dinner party at like a hall or some type of venue. And she kind of has eyes for him right there. But he kind of just exchanges words with her, and they pass by each other while he's getting a drink or something, if I'm not mistaken. But then they meet again in a meeting, and, you know, it's they goof around a little bit and look at each other while he's drinking like his mochaccino, whatever it is he gets on his nose or his face. And so something as small as a broken umbrella changes his entire life, because she comes up with her umbrella and she helps him in the rain. And his bright idea is, you want to go get a drink? So they go get a drink, and, you know, they're talking, and she knows his situation. Now, this movie still holds up so well today, because there are women out there. You know what? I'm not just going to categorize it. There are men and women who still do this kind of thing. And she knows that he's a married man, that he has a family, that he has a dog. Like, he puts it all on the table. She knows what's up, and she's into him anyway. And my whole thing with the Dan Gallagher character is, I, for the life of me, man, I'll never understand why he even entertained Alex in the first place. Now, as men, now anybody can disagree with me on this. I always say it, I'm all for a healthy, positive debate, as long as we keep it respectful. But we know when we're, you know, as men, we know when we're on the verge of flirting, we know when somebody's flirting with us, we know what it is. We are not stupid. And if we do something stupid, I would like to think that we are not that fucking stupid out here. But, you know, he plays into it. He bites the bait, and, you know, they end up getting a check, and then you cut straight into an intense ass sex scene in her kitchen. And they're getting it in, man. Like, they got the kitchen sink running. She's pouring, you know, water on her nipples, and he, you know, it's crazy. And they're all over each other, tearing each other's clothes off and stuff. And it is an intense scene, man. And shout out to Michael Douglas and Glenn Close, because they did a lot of rehearsals, like, to get their chemistry going before they even rehearsed the sex scene to begin with. Now, that's good acting chops right there, I gotta say. But, you know, apparently he busts her ass, and, you know, she's all up under him when they're done. And they apparently spend a weekend together, I think. And, you know, they go out dancing afterwards, they have sex in the elevator, and It's the chemistry between them is there. It's really intense. And, you know, after their weekend is done, he up and leaves in the morning. He goes back home to his family, and everything's normal. And as a viewer, it's kind of fucked up, you know. Like, I, like, even as a kid, I kind of looked at it like, damn, well, he just went home back to his family, kissed his wife, kissed his daughter, pet the dog like it was nothing. So, you know, of course, Alex, he doesn't know that she is mentally unstable, aka will chop his dick off if she can't have it, and she'll put it in a jar type crazy. But he doesn't know that. So she gives him a call, and, you know, he's kind of like kind of fleeing her off, like, yeah, you know, I have work, I got work to do, I'm busy. And he's like, you know, I have to take the dog out. She's like, well, bring the dog with you. And he's like, well, I have to make dinner. And she's like, well, I'll make dinner, I'm a good cook, you know, just come on, like, give me another chance. And, you know, he bites the bait again. Not only did he bite the bait, get caught and escape unscathed, but he finds his way back and bites the bait again and has another great time with her. Then they cut to them, they're running in the park with the dog playing catch, and they're sitting there laughing. Then they cut to a scene where it's a really great scene, because she's playing I want to say it's Madame Butterfly. She's playing this opera music while she's making spaghetti and they're drinking wine. And he's really actually, they're really getting to know each other more in this scene. Like, they have a little more dialogue, and, you know, you can tell she's bothered. She's really getting irritated with the fact that he has to keep dipping off and leaving her. And, you know, he doesn't think anything of it. So when you see, this is one thing about this movie I want people to notice. If you didn't notice, I want people to pay attention to when you first see Glenn Close, as opposed to when Glenn Close starts sleeping with Michael Douglas. Then I want everybody out there to watch her transformation, her physical transformation. She literally starts to look crazy. Like, I'm not going to say in a way where she looks sick, but mentally sick, not, you know, physical transformation as in her face, her facial expressions are different. You know, she stares at things differently. You know, it's something in her eyes that just isn't right as the movie goes along. And this is the first time you get to see it, where he leaves and, you know, she tries to plead with him and she's like, you know, I don't like this. And he basically tells her, like, yo, you knew the rules. You knew what it was. You knew I had a wife and I have to go back home. And, you know, they have a little exchange of words. She kicks him out and he's leaving, and then she's crying in his arms. And then we find out Alex Forrest is a cutter. She slit her wrist to get him to stay. Now, that's some scary shit. Now, I'm not going to say personally I've been in a situation like that, but I know people that have been in situations like that. And that sounds very uncomfortable for someone to put you in a situation where they could do harm to themselves, and you might be held accountable, or you might be an accomplice in that or something. You know, it's really disturbing to think about. And that's when this movie kicks into gear. Now, it does let up because it gives you room to breathe, but that is the moment when you know this chick is out of her fucking mind. She sliced not one, but both of her wrists. So, of course, Dan, being somewhat of the stand-up guy he is, he's still kind of a piece of shit at heart because he's cheating on his wife, you know, and he's disappointing his daughter. But him being the semi-stand-up guy that he is, you know, he stays with her and he leaves. And him and his wife are, I think they're in the process of moving to a country home at this point. And Alex, before she gets wind of that, she shows up at his office and she thanks him for staying and, you know, saving her life. And he's just like, you know, take care, take care. And basically, this is Dan's way of saying, listen, it was fun, and while I did give it another go around or two, this shit is over. You know, you can't be slicing your wrist and rubbing blood on my cheeks and shit like that. Nah, he's done. Dan is completely done with this chick. He wants to wipe the slate clean and act like it never happened. And sadly, Alex is a little more persistent than anybody probably watching or in the movie had ever expected, because she, you know, she calls him in the middle of the night and his wife's asleep and she kind of like tosses a little bit while he's on the phone. So he's got to cover it up. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I don't have the documentation to answer that question. You know, he's playing it off because he knows if his wife finds out that this woman's calling a woman that he had an affair with, there's going to be hell to pay. So she's pacing back and forth in the room and she's breathing heavily. And she's like, I got to see you. And, you know, he agrees to see her. And come to find out, Alex Forrest, people, is Prego. She's Prego Waffles. Dan, the pre-cum was a motherfucker, or he just skeeted all up in it. And she told him in public, you know, I think they're in the heading to the subway, and she tells him, like, I'm pregnant. She's like, you know, you don't have to be a part of this child's life. It's a decision for me, but I was hoping you would want to. And he wants to get rid of it. So, of course, they're at a disagreement, and shit is just slowly hitting the fan. The tension buildup in this movie is amazing. It's great, and it leaves you thinking, like, what is she going to do next to try to, you know, hurt him or manipulate his situation or sabotage his situation? You don't know, because this chick is completely unpredictable. So she finds out he's in the process of moving with his family to this country home. And one day he comes home from work, and Alex is sitting in his living room talking to his wife. And they shake hands and they do a close up on the scars on her wrist. And she's like, have we met before? And he has to play it off in front of his wife. But his wife, and I feel so bad for Ann Archer in this movie, man, because she's so unknowing and she's such a sweetheart, man. And she loves her husband. She loves her family. She loves her life. And she just doesn't have a fucking clue what's going on. And she's just like, honey, this is Alex Forrest. She's such a sweetheart. And Alex is expecting a baby. And then they do like this slow, it's not a dolly zoom, but it's a really slow zoom in. At least I don't think it's a dolly zoom. I might have to go back and watch it after this review is over. But they do this really slow zoom when Alex tells Dan, she's like, oh, I gather you guys are moving to the country. And his wife has told her the address. And she's like, let me give you our telephone number. And when the wife is writing the number down, Dan is looking at Alex like, bitch, I'm going to kill you. You have lost your fucking mind. It's like, it's an exchange of words between them that, and no words are even spoken between them. He looks at her like, you're seriously fucked up in the head. And she looks at him kind of like almost sad. And she kind of is saying to him like, well, you know, what else? You left me no choice type of thing. And she actually says that because he goes to her apartment and it gets pretty intense there, and not in a good way. And he, you know, he flips out on her. He's like, you're showing up at my apartment. Cut the shit. You know, I don't know what you're doing, but it's going to stop, Alex. And, you know, that's when you get the famous line. She's like, I'm not going to be ignored, Dan. And she just stares at him and just was shaking her head left to right. And, you know, they have their words, and she does make a good point. Now, while Alex is the antagonist in this movie, she is the villain. She is the crazy woman. She does make a good point. Fellas, don't be mad at me out there if y'all listening. She does make a good point because, you know, he says, you know, you're crazy. And she's like, why? Because, you know, she's like, because I won't allow you to treat me like some slut you can just bang and throw in the garbage. And she's like, I'm going to be the mother of your child and you need to face your responsibilities and stuff like that. And she does make a good point. While she is crazy, I can't stress it enough. She does make a really valid point, man. She does, and it was probably maybe the one time I sympathized with the character Alex Forrest, because I'm like, yep, I can't disagree with her on that. I really, truly can't. But, you know, things, like I said, shit hits the fan again because he's leaving out of her apartment, and he's just ignoring her, and she's apologizing, and then before he knows it, she's like, I'll tell your wife, and he chokes her and slams her against the wall, and he's like, you come anywhere near my wife and I'll kill you. And him putting his hands on her, that's, listen, man, there needs to be a tension meter. They need to re-release this DVD and have a tension meter, because it's slowly building, man, I'm telling y'all. And if anybody out there listening has not seen Fatal Attraction, the tension in this movie is absolutely fucking bonkers, and it's good, and it works, and the pacing of it is genius. It's pure genius. It's not rushed, it's not forced, no nothing. It's a perfect, nice little flow to it. So, you know, things, oh man, they move out to this country home, and the home is beautiful. They're in there painting. But, you know, his phone rings and nobody picks it up and he just stares at it. But it ends up being, you know, somebody that they know. So he's on edge, but come to find out, Alex is stalking him, man. She's stalking him, you know, in a parking garage, and she's driving outside of his house, and she goes to the extreme, man, and she, you know, the family's out one day, and this is when Dan has bought little Ellen, his daughter. I don't remember if I said this, but his daughter is played by Ellen Latz, and you know, it's fucked up because I hate to say this, but I really thought the daughter was a boy back in the day because I couldn't, the short haircut thing threw me off. And as a cute kid, and I'm just like, man, I wasn't sure if he had a son or a daughter. And I'm just like, okay, well, maybe Ellen is a neutral name for people in 1987. I wasn't sure, but I'm sorry. Anybody that's offended out there, I'm sorry. But yeah, his daughter, you know, he's bought his daughter this bunny rabbit. Everything's cool. They're living out in the, you know, they're living La Vida Loca in the country. So the family goes out and they come back, man. And this is the iconic scene that everybody talks about in this movie. This is probably the one scene that everybody remembers from this entire movie, is they come home and everything's quiet. And you have these cuts between Ann Archer walking into the kitchen and seeing a boiling pot on the stove. And then you keep cutting from her to Ellen running towards the, you know, where they keep the bunny rabbit outside. And then you have cuts of Michael Douglas running towards the daughter when she's calling for her dad because the bunny's gone. But when Ann Archer opens up this pot on the stove, the rabbit's dead shit in there. Alex was, apparently she's a fan of steamed rabbit wherever she comes from. And it's really a disturbing moment in the movie, because the limits that she's going to now are just getting kind of violent. And if I skipped any parts out there, I'm sorry, people, but I'm trying to get through this as fast as I can. But, you know, for her to put that rabbit on the stove, you know, that was the last straw. So that is when you have a scene where Michael Douglas has to have this conversation with his wife, and she's just wondering, like, why would she do this? What is her angle? What's going on? And he has to tell his wife, you know, he knows her, and she's kind of like, I don't know if she's joking or she's just like, did you have an affair with her? He's like, yeah, I did. And he's like, and she's pregnant, and he tells her that it's his baby. And then, you know, they have a fight, they split up. So of course, Michael Douglas takes matters into his own hands, and he goes to Alex's apartment, and he breaks into her apartment. You know, he breaks open the door, and they have this fight. It's a nice little fight. You can tell, I mean, I could peep the stunt double action in it. I mean, I'm, like I said, I'm a geek like that. So when Michael Douglas slams his shoulder into that window, you can clearly see the rug on that stunt double's head. That's not Michael Douglas, but it is, like I said, the scenes with them are intense. Even when they're trying to kill each other or trying to escape each other, the scenes are great. And he ends up not killing her, even though she does lunge at him with a kitchen knife when he tries to choke her to death, because he does try to take her out. He tries to choke her to death. And by the way, man, I think Adrian Lynn should have did a better job with that scene, or Michael Douglas should have. I mean, he should have did a better job directing them, because if Michael Douglas is choking her out and his cheeks are shaking and his face is turning red and Glenn Close is turning red, there's no way she should be able to move her neck left to right. It shouldn't even happen. But, you know, continuity, schmontinuity, whatever. But it's just little things like that piss me the fuck off in the movie. It takes away from the realism, but it still is an intense scene nonetheless. Now, he doesn't kill her. You know, he kind of like comes to terms with what he's doing. He stops, but she comes at him with a knife. He disarms her, and he's backing away from her when he drops the knife, and she's just leaning on something, and she's smiling at him. Now, this is when you know the rest of this, there's no outs after this. He's either got to kill her, or she's got to kill him, or they have to pack their shit up and holler at NASA and move to another planet, because it's just not going to end well for any parties involved. Now, what Alex does after this, and Dan and Beth are already split up at this point. You know, he calls to talk to Ellen and all that type of stuff. He's still in his daughter's life, but Alex Forrest, man, she is vicious. She goes to Ellen's school and picks her up and takes her to the amusement park. Not harmless, but to the naked eye, it looks harmless. This woman takes this kid to the amusement park. She doesn't do anything to her. She gets her cotton candy and popcorn and all this fly shit. And then she drops her off. And when she drops off, she's like, Ellen. Ellen looks back and she says, can I have a kiss? And Ellen kisses her on the cheek. Unknowing, man. And it's sad. Anytime children are in jeopardy and they don't know it, is really scary, man. And I know it's just a movie, but as a father, I wouldn't know how to handle that situation. And actually, I think I had this explanation all wrong, because I think that when... Damn, I just had a brain fart, people. I'm sorry. Y'all have to forgive me for that. But I think that when Beth got into the car accident looking for Ellen when she was at the amusement park with Alex, that's when I think Dan showed up to her apartment and they had that scuffle. I'm not sure. Like I said, people, I'm going to go back and watch this movie again tonight. I hadn't seen it in a little while. I actually just up and decided to do the review. But so what they do at the end. Now, this is the third act, people. Dan spending time with his family. You know, the dad's kind of looking at him sideways because it's like, yo, this is all your fault type of shit. But he lets it slide because they're at the hospital. And Dan feels terrible, man, that he set off this chain reaction of events, and it really is his fault, man. You know, and this is what happens when we bite the bait. We set off shit spirals out of control, and it's just one domino hits the other, and it's just downhill after that. But this is the third act we're in right now, and they're at their home, their country home. Ellen's not there, so Dan runs Beth a hot bath. You know, he's on some please don't go tank R&B, you know, baby don't leave me type of shit. And so he's running her bath water, he's stroking her cheek like, whatever you want, baby, you got it. So she's all banged up, her arms in a cast, her eyes blackened and all that type of stuff. But apparently she still got love for this guy, man. That's her husband, and kudos to her, man. They don't build women like that anymore. I mean, they do. And it's sad that they have to endure stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not even going to jump into that. That's a whole nother topic for some, Mari Povich type of shit. But he runs her bathwater. She's in the she's about to get in the tub. And then lo and behold, who pops up? You guessed it. Alex Forrest for 200. And she's got the knife in her hand, and she's just like, what are you doing here? And she's telling Beth, she's like, you know, he tried to say goodbye to me the other night. And she's scraping, as she's talking to Beth, Alex is scraping the knife at her nightgown, and eventually it's tearing the cotton of her nightgown, but then it starts tearing through her flesh, and you can hear it and you can see it, and she's bleeding and she's kind of like flinching. But this is how crazy this bitch has gotten through the course of this movie. She's flinching, but she's still talking, and she's still upset, and she's just letting it ride, and she's still scraping at it. So, you know, they have a little, not necessarily a scuffle, but she's trying to slice up Beth, and in comes Dan Gallagher to the rescue. And this is one of the times where I don't condone men hitting women. Let's get that out in the open. But I've had a woman threaten to pull a knife on me, and my whole thing is, listen, I won't hit you, but I will restrain you. And that's exactly what the fuck he had to do. He had to restrain her, but he restrained her times 30, because he chokes her and he puts, I mean, she does get a couple slices off, and she's slicing through the shower curtain, and that's a scary scene in itself, because you don't know what's about to happen. You don't know who's going to die. At this point, the movie's brand new for people, so you don't know what's about to happen. You don't know who's going to get the upper hand. And when she's slicing through that shower curtain, it's kind of scary, because, you know, it's a knife. Like, it'll one wrong artery and it's a wrap. So, you know, he gets the best of her, and he chokes her. And this is another scary shot because you are in the water. The camera is in the water while her eyes roll in the back of her head, all the way in the back of her head, to the point where they look blue, bluish gray. Like they look like she has dead eyes. So, you know, he chokes her out, man. He saves his wife. He saves himself. He chokes her out. And then there is this moment of silence where the water is just running. You just hear the water running. There's steam in the bathroom. And you feel like all is well. And this is probably, this is a good jump scare. If I'm not mistaken, this was in 100 scariest movie moments that used to come on. I think it was AMC. And it was well deserved because it's just silence and you think she drowned to death. They do a close up on her in the tub and her eyes are regular again. And she's just dead. You know, she's emotionless, expressionless. And then you can hear her like gag on the water while she jumps out the tub with the knife in hand. And then a gunshot goes off and you see Ann Archer, badass Ann Archer with the thing on her arm, and she's holding the gun, and Alex Forrest, boom, she's down for the count. Now, let me say something, people. Now, the ending's, after that, that's it. You know, they have a little brief moment with the police and then they play music while they're focusing the camera in on a family picture. And I will say that is the ending they should have went with. That's a classic ending, and it was definitely fit for the movie. However, there was an alternate ending for this movie, and I don't think it would have been as impactful as the theatrical ending. Now, the alternate ending was Alex Forrest killing herself. You know, she's sitting in her apartment, and it's been a while since I've seen it, so I hope I'm nailing this too. She's in her apartment, and she's listening to that Madame Butterfly music, and she just slowly slices her throat. And then you have the aftermath, which is the police coming up to Dan and Beth's home. And they're asking them, you know, questions. And they're like, yeah, Alex Forrest has been murdered. We need you to come with us. And then I guess it's just implied that Dan goes down for her suicide. You know, they think he murdered her. Now, while that's, I could see if they left it open. Like, if they were going to make another one. But I don't think that ending would have been as good. So, you know, and I will say this. I think that ending, that was a very good chess move for them to reshoot that ending, because what it was they showed in front, they had a test screening and they didn't get good feedback for the ending. So I think one of the major reshoots was the ending. Good chess move right there. And I think that was one of the reasons why it did so well, because the payoff was so sweet. Now, this movie, this shit cost about $14 million to make. And it grossed, and I actually wrote down what it grossed. Now, that I did write down. It grossed, it was $14 million that they gave them to make it, and it grossed, y'all ready for this? $156,645,693. Now, this, for this to be 1987, oh yeah, that's big money. Now, we're not talking about right now, where it's just like, oh, well, we could have hit 1,000 more. Let's scrap the movie. No, this was 1987, people. This was a big, 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 big deal for them. And hence why it is one of the greatest movies ever made. It's a classic. And it paved the way for movies like, you know, it paved the way for movies like Thin Line Between Love and Hate, which actually references Fatal Attraction, where Martin, you know, he plays Darnell. He's like, I'm caught up in real life Fatal Attraction up in this motherfucker, man. And it's like, you gotta pay that respect, because that's what it was. I mean, that was, while I say this movie was for us, I mean men, like men, don't matter, black, white, whatever. But A Thin Line Between Love and Hate was, when I say our, I'm talking about black people. That was our Fatal Attraction, and that's classic. But then you had stuff like Swim Fan. that was more so geared towards the, I actually went to the theater to see that. It was actually geared more towards like younger audiences, the high school audience. And it wasn't bad. I actually own the DVD. It's pretty good, but it was no, any movie after that, you're living in the shadow of Fatal Attraction. And then you had movies like Obsessed with Beyonce and Ali Lord or Idris Elba, which was, I mean, that movie's kind of weak to me. It really was. It was, yeah, it just wasn't. I would pick Swim Fan over it. And I actually would pick A Thin Line Between Love and Hate over both of those. But of course, there's been a lot more movies that I can't name off the bat. A lot more of those, you know, stalker women going crazy. I would say Single White Female, but she was more so stalking her roommate and trying to become her roommate. And, you know, other people just got caught in the process. But yeah, man, this movie is so, I would say as a writer, it's inspiring because, you know, this is a movie. I have a list of movies that inspired me to write and make maybe my first short film, like an independent film. And Fatal Attraction is definitely on that list because even though it was $14 million they gave them to make this movie, it seems like a good indie movie. Like, it seems like, I'm not really an art house guy, you know, like, I don't buy into the hype of when stuff gets played at film festivals and they get all these awards and stand ovations, but a lot of those movies are good, and it seems like this could have been one of them had it not gotten a, you know, like a mainstream theatrical release. But one of the things, man, about this movie was, this is like the Bible, this is a cinematic Bible for men, you know, like, this will teach you all about stage 10 clingers. This will make you want to be celibate. This will make you never. I mean, listen, man, anybody out there listening, if you have cheated on your spouse, your wife, your girlfriend, doesn't matter. If she takes you back, personally, I would listen. I don't. First of all, hashtag black men don't cheat. Shout out to Charlamagne. You know, I don't agree with a lot of shit he says, but hashtag black men don't cheat. At least the smart ones. But it's like, if I was to ever fuck up and make that mistake, I wouldn't even want mine to take me back, because it's like, and anybody out there listening, if she took you back, don't trust her. Sleep with one eye open for the remainder of your stay. Please do it, because it's just, it's not, listen, man, this movie says so much and it's still so relevant. Still so relevant, man. And I've never had a woman try to kill me per se, but being stalked is one of the most uncomfortable feelings I've ever felt in my fucking life. And I can honestly say that. Never had, you know, I've been threatened to have knives pulled on me and stuff like that. Have been in physical altercations. I'm not going to get too in depth because I don't want people judging my life. But let me just say, the whole Fatal Attraction aspect is really scary. It's uncomfortable, man. Like, the movie, I can laugh at it, but I can also take it seriously where it's real life. There's nothing fake. There's nothing fictional really about this movie at all, in tone, in context, and anything. Like, it really can happen. And another thing I want to point out is that Michael Douglas in this movie, he paved the way for characters to be played over and over by, because, let me get back to my point, but let me just say this. Michael Douglas, for some reason, he's a great actor, man. One of my favorite actors of all time, along with Glenn Close. But Michael Douglas is always doing something wrong in these movies. He's either in Fatal Attraction doing some shit wrong. He's in Disclosure about to fuck his boss doing something wrong. He's in God damn, man. I want to see, what was the other movie? Was it The Perfect Murder? I can't really remember, man. It's been such a long time since I've visited these classics. But Michael Douglas was always doing something foul in these movies, man. And it's like, it always brings me back to this movie because it really is something you reap what you sow type of shit. And but I like it, man. It's a statement. It's a lesson learned. But he paved the way for characters like this to be played over and over by people like Michael Beach. Michael Beach is the black Michael Douglas. Now, if anybody listening doesn't know who Michael Beach is, he is Miles from Soul Food, who slept with Cousin Faith. He is the husband from Wait and Exhale, who cheated on, not Whitney Houston, Angela Bassett with a white woman. He's doing something wrong in every movie. Now, he is the black version of Michael Douglas, Michael Beach. Now, if anybody, I hope I can get a witness out there. If anybody hear me, I hope y'all feel me on that. But yeah, man, like I said, this movie, and if I haven't mentioned it, I do have this, the DVD menu music playing in the background. So this whole time, if anybody's been listening to me and you hear this creepy music in the background, yes, I am a geek. I play music in the background if it fits well enough. But like I said, man, Fatal Attraction, I purposely did this movie for a couple of reasons. One, because it's a great movie, and I always wanted to review this movie somehow, some way, and I finally got a platform to do it. So another reason is because, of course, the season, it's cuffing season, and you know, people get cuffed up by mistake. They get literally cuffed up and they wake up in a room and the chick will just be there like, "I'm your number one fan. You should have never gave me the D," type of stuff. You know, it's different ways to get cuffed, but this seemed fitting for the way the weather's changing. And another reason is just because this is a testament to thriller cinema, you know, suspenseful cinema. And I know I said this before, I'll say it as many times I have to, you don't get films like this anymore. And I think it was a great time that it came out in 87, because it was closing off the 80s with something that could survive. I felt like this movie could survive for 88, 89, and then well into the 90s. But I feel like it was a healthy movie to cap off the era of the 80s. And thank God it still lives on, man. And I love watching, you know, like, there's behind the scenes features. There's I don't know if they've done reunions, but there's a bunch of interviews where they go back and they reflect on the movie, and the way that they talk about it, and the way that they talk about, you know, the process of making it. And it wasn't all, you know, it wasn't all peaches and cream. Like, it was a tough movie to shoot, you know, especially when you have two great actors like Michael Douglas and Glenn Close. When you have like intimate scenes like that, you know, it's not an easy thing to shoot. And that's why I'm glad they have footage of them doing, you know, rehearsals, and, you know, they're going over their lines and they're going over the script and stuff like that. I love that, you know, directors still have actors do that, because you can just as easily throw people together and expect them to like to get it. But to have them take time out prior to actually filming the movie, I don't know if this was weeks before, months before. I want to say it was months before, because they look completely different than when they actually started shooting a movie. But the way that Adrian Lin put this thing together, man, and shout out to James Dearden too for writing a great script. It's the two of them together was really inspiring, and I really need to look up on IMDb if they work together again, because if they did and I haven't seen it, I definitely need to check it out. But people, listen, man, in closing, let me just say, just don't dip off, man. Just don't dip off. And if you do, please just keep in mind, there's an Alex Forrest for every unfaithful motherfucker out there. And she comes in male form, and she comes in female form, if that makes any sense at all. Because there are male movies like this too. You got, I don't know, what's that movie that came out recently where Michael Ealy's stalking, was it Sanaa Lathan or something, the perfect guy or something like that? You have the guy ones out there too. Maybe I'll backtrack and do you know, the male version of Fatal Attraction, whatever early version that was back in the 80s or the 70s, if they have it, which I really want to say was Cape Fear, but he was more so stalking I want to say Gregory Peck, but I could be wrong. Anyway, I'm not gonna go off the deep end about that. Hope you all enjoyed it, man. And I hope, listen, man, everybody strap up during cuffing season, all right? I know y'all going wild out there, but if y'all do think about it, please watch that movie and listen to this review. Then you tell me if you want to dip off and wild out this cuffing season and go, you know, find yourself at the clutches of Alex Forrest. Because I don't think anybody out there listening like steam rabbit for dinner or anything like that, so hopefully y'all enjoyed this review, man. I'll figure out what the next one's going to be, but appreciate y'all tuning in. For anybody out there listening, follow me on Instagram and Facebook too, by the way, Romero Tutor. Got a Facebook group called The Cinemaniacs if anybody wants to check that out. So, you know, I'll get at y'all next episode, man.